into order on April 19th. We regret that we were overloaded and under-timed last week, so we appreciate your patience. We will try and get through as many as we can today. There might be a few toward the end that do not get a chance to testify, but we will be carrying this hearing over as long as we have folks that would like to testify. I'd like to call first Chuck Craig, Jim Rue, and Brent Searle, if they're with us, from the Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chairman, you can guess which one of those I am.
Best looking one, right?
you're a wise man, Mr. Chairman.
Not a wise guy, though, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Katie Koba, the Director of the Department of Agriculture, and Jim Rue was our board member of the Board of Ag, who had come down to testify last week and obviously didn't get a chance to appear before the committee last week. He couldn't make it today, so I had to step in his place. And with me are Chuck Craig, the Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture, and Brent Searle, who's a Special Assistant to me at the department and really our point person on renewable energy efforts. So I'm appearing before the committee today to talk about the package of bills that you're considering, and want to make a statement that both the State Board of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Agriculture strongly support the development of the biofuels industry in Oregon. Obviously, we feel the benefit for renewable fuels for the agricultural industry is great in terms of opportunities for rural farm economies and urban centers, new rotational crops for growers, job creation associated with processing facilities, reducing U.S. reliance on imported oil supplies, development of a domestic renewable fuel source, and decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. In supporting biofuels and renewable energy development, the board and the department recognize specific challenges and issues. And one of those that we're working very closely with the proponents of the legislation as well as the industry is that with the concern around canola production. Canola is considered to be probably the most viable crop, at least right now, in terms of biodiesel opportunities, and we have some serious concerns that have been expressed by the specialty seed industry here in the Willamette Valley, and we certainly believe that the Department of Agriculture plays a very important role in terms of working with the industry and using our statutory authority to establish control districts, which would actually outline where you could and could not grow canola. And so we intend to continue to have that conversation and hopefully get to the point where all of the industry here in the valley is comfortable with the direction we're going in terms of canola production. At its most recent board meeting, the Board of Agriculture passed a resolution supporting tax credits, property tax exemptions, siting assistance, and other methods of promotion and use of biofuels, biofuel development, and biofuel processing in Oregon, and a copy of that resolution is attached to your testimony. And we do have comments that we'd like to share with you on some of the individual bills. House Bill 3033 does include a mandate around fuel blend requirements. The board had pretty extensive conversation around this topic and certainly would hope that establishing a mandate wouldn't result in higher fuel costs for the industry. Obviously, diesel prices are at an all-time high in terms of cost inputs to the industry. Fuel costs is a very, very significant component. And I think the industry certainly recognizes the alternatives with alternative fuel and the opportunities with alternative fuels, but wouldn't want a mandate that would set an even higher price that makes it more difficult for the industry to maintain its competitiveness in a global marketplace. House Bill 3030 and 3033 both mandate additional responsibilities for the Department of Agriculture. This could potentially require new resources for us to make sure that we have the quality assurance with biofuel blends, as well as certifying facilities that process biofuels. Right now, the present mechanism for our motor fuel quality program, which handles motor fuel quality in the state, is a fee on license pumps charged to station owners. And some source of revenue is going to be needed if we're going to add on this additional requirement to monitor biofuel quality, as well as certifying facilities to do that processing. We are estimating that it would cost us about $170,000 in the next biennium to carry out the responsibilities of these two pieces of legislation. House Bill 3035 is the bill that creates a surcharge on fuel pump license fees to fund a school bus diesel emission control retrofit program. And we need to inform you that we do strongly oppose this bill. Right now, Oregon's pump fees are the highest in the nation, and to put an additional surcharge on those pump fees to retrofit school buses, we think would be a difficulty, both politically as well as our ability to continue to fund our motor quality fuel licensing program. And finally, in regards to House Bill 3031, the Board of Agriculture did have reservations about moving a tax incentive from one segment of the industry to another. In House Bill 3031, the pollution control tax credit would be moved from the grass seed industry, which is there for providing field burning alternatives, and be applied to equipment for biofuels production. With those comments, however, Mr. Chair, I do want to reiterate both the Board and the Department of Agriculture's support for these concepts and the opportunities for the state, both rural and urban, around renewable energy. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? If not, I wonder if we could break in for just a moment. We have two representatives with us, and I think they're probably pressured. If I could call Representative Krupp and Representative Dallin. Why don't you start it off, Representative Krupp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be before you. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp from House District 17, and here obviously to testify in support of the package of bills that the four bills you're hearing today and the others that are before this committee. I want to thank a diverse group of people for sharing a lot of these bills in terms of the ultimate goal of what we're trying to achieve here. In these bills, there are things that people love and there are things that people hate. And it ultimately will be up to you as a committee to divine which is good policy for the state of Oregon. And I'm very confident that you can. Let me share with you the genesis of how these bills really evolved. During the 2002 interim, Speaker Simmons had granted me the opportunity to conduct a task force on biofuels, which we did. Arose a number of issues. I tried to address a couple of those issues in the 2003 session, was unsuccessful towards the end of the process. And this time worked with Representative Jackie Dingfelder to come to an agreement on a package of bills that would be broadly accepted and would be bipartisan in nature. So what we did is we negotiated and did a lot of talking over the interim, and we came up with basically the package of bills that you see before you. And I just wanted to start off, Mr. Chair, with just briefly going through these bills. House Bill 3030 is a property tax exemption for ethanol production facilities and biodiesel and oilseed crushing facilities. This is actually a bill that I had introduced last session. And as you know, Oregon for many years has had a statute on the books since the early 80s for ethanol plants. There's been a property tax exemption that has never been used because we've never built an ethanol plant in Oregon. But we hope to change that, and I believe that we will. And before I go any further, let me just share with you the Department of Energy has sent us a list a couple of days ago. There are about 9 or 10 companies that are actually engaged in the siting process here in Oregon, and two or three more that are in the process of talking with the Department of Energy and strongly considering Oregon as either an ethanol or a biodiesel facilities. And there's a lot of strategic reasons for that California fuel market being one of those that would be possible for us to send blended fuels to. House Bill 3030, again, is a property tax exemption for ethanol, biodiesel, oil seed crushing facilities. And we negotiated last session, and I made sure that similar language was in this bill, this session, with local districts, local taxing districts and so forth, that they would have an opportunity on the biodiesel portion of this to kind of give their thumbs up or thumbs down on the property tax exemption. The counties and special districts were very concerned about that. I negotiated that out with them. And so this bill should lead us to the place where the property tax exemption that's in place today will stay in place. Nothing will change there. But the biodiesel and oil seed crushing exemption will be available if a majority of the taxing districts agree that it's a good idea to do this. House Bill 3031 is a pollution control tax credit. As we know, that has been the law in Oregon for some time. And this would allow the facilities that are necessary for farmers or others to store crops that or natural materials that are going to be processed into alternative fuels, ethanol or biodiesel, or biooils for that matter, to have a tax credit for the building of those facilities or the purchasing of those specialized pieces of equipment to make that happen. It does, of course, there are a number of amendments to this bill that some folks have are proposing. We also, at the same time, as part of my agreement with, in the bipartisan spirit, my friends wanted this to be a revenue neutral issue, and so I am believing that the straw business, of which I am, as you know, a fifth generation Oregon farmer, and I am a grass seed farmer, and I do sell my straw that gets shipped across the ocean. That business, I think, is mature, and the reason that I removed them from qualifying for the pollution control tax credit is because I don't believe in endless subsidies. And I think this industry has done very well for itself. I think they have peaked and are probably falling off a bit for a number of reasons, and I think they're at capacity within the system as it is today. And that's why I chose to remove that particular tax credit and move it over and extend it to what I think is a proper direction that, again, on a bipartisan basis, that we should go. That's House Bill 3031. House Bill 3032 is a grower's tax credit. And this is for anyone who produces natural substances, corn, wheat, wood waste out of the forest or wood waste generated throughout the state in industrial wood waste, waste grease out of restaurants, renderings from animal slaughterhouses. All of these can be used to make biofuels, either ethanol or biodiesel. And what I wanted to do, at least for a short period of time, is establish that additional little incentive for individuals to say, yeah, I want to be part of this. I want to utilize the natural resources that I have at my disposal, and I want to move them into the production of biofuels. It has a small fiscal to it, relatively, because the reality is going to be is that there are a lot of plants that are in the stages of being permitted to be built. We haven't built anything yet. By the time we get facilities built, crops will not likely be planted until the 2006 growing year, which means that any tax credit that would be extended would not actually happen until or have any financial impact on the state until the latter part of the 2005-2007 biennium. And frankly, I'm believing it's going to be somewhere around that $300,000 to $400,000 range for this particular tax credit. And then lastly, House Bill 3034, vehicle tax credit, or vehicle fuel tax credit rather, and used fuel tax reduction. Again, an incentive for individuals to have a very small reduction of the gas tax associated with these types of fuels. so that, again, we can incentivize the end user, the customer who pulls into the pump, to purchase the fuels in the hopes that it'll be passed on to the consumer in the form of an incentive for a lower-priced fuel. And, in fact, just down the street down here, by the way, is the AMPM, and I fill up my gasoline pickup there. And there's a little sticker down at the bottom down there. It says this contains 10% ethanol. And it is, by the way, just about the cheapest gas in town, I would share with you, too. That's why I go there. So this also establishes, also directs the Department of Administrative Services to determine the total amount of diesel that's used in the state vehicles during the year, and that they would use 5% of that for biodiesel products. And they have some comments to that. They just handed me some of their amendments that they would like to see. And they have some valid points in that particular issue. Let me share with you about that. That in itself is a mandate to the state to burn 5% biodiesel out of all the state's diesel that it burns in a year. This is not dissimilar to what the United States Navy is doing right now. The Navy is currently engaged in the mandate to, and I have it here somewhere in my paperwork, the mandate to use biodiesel in a lot of their vehicles, and that is extending also into hydraulic fluids. The Department of Defense is looking at hydraulic fluids that are that you can spill on the ground and not have a hazmat incident. And the types of bio oils that we can create in Oregon fit that profile very nicely. The important thing to remember about what we're trying to do here is we're trying to, in a small way, incentivize an industry that utilizes Oregon's natural resources, all of them, to benefit our environment, to benefit our economy, most of all, and especially us in the rural areas that are so natural resource dependent. And let me share with you this statistic. In the last 30 years, we as Americans have shifted $7 trillion of our money to OPEC nations alone. $7 trillion over 30 years. Brazil will soon, and here's a great little article on that, and there's a gentleman in the back of the room that can talk about this much better than I can. Brazil is moving to 100% alcohol in their vehicles. They've been burning ethanol for a long time. They ended their subsidies in the 90s. It is possible. I think they've led the way to show that this is a very doable concept. Many other states, by the way, have prices where ethanol blended fuels are considerably lower priced for a variety of reasons than what unleaded gasoline is. In fact, when you are a blender of ethanol, there's a 51 cent a gallon tax credit that you are granted by the federal government. There is coming a 20 cent a gallon blender's tax credit for biodiesel. Last week I had the privilege of spending a couple of days in Washington, D.C. I also had the privilege of having a 30-minute meeting with the new Secretary of Agriculture, USDA, Mike Johanns. And I sort of shared with him what we were trying to do here in Oregon in terms of make Oregon the first West Coast state to fully embrace the concepts of renewable fuels and production to benefit our local economies, our local state. And he made the comment to me that the president is very much behind this idea nationwide, and that they, in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the president of the White House, is pushing Congress in the energy title that is being drafted right now, and in the upcoming Farm Bill in 2007, to make sure that there are lots of incentives to incentivize biofuels in America. So what we're doing is, frankly, we're trying to, in Oregon, with these package of bills, signal to the world, make a very loud statement to the world and to the investment banking community that is going to fund the loans to build these production facilities, to say that we're serious about establishing a viable biofuels industry here in oil, or in Oregon, and bio oils for that matter too. And I'm pleased to share with you that a gentleman will be coming up, who's a constituent of mine, is in the room, who is going to be building, using new technology that is more efficient, is going to be building a cellulosic type of ethanol production facility in the Portland area to use the wood waste that's generated, the 300 tons a day that's generated in the Portland metro area for the production of biofuels. And he's going to come up and share with you their vision, what they're trying to accomplish, and the basics of their business plan, and how that it is economically viable and feasible. These bills in and of themselves will not create or sustain the biofuels industry in Oregon. They are a piece of the puzzle. As crude oil prices go higher and higher, you know that the opportunity to do this becomes more real because the cost issues become in balance. And in fact, again, as I've stated, in some Midwestern states, the rack price of ethanol is 10 to 15 cents a gallon cheaper than it is here in Oregon. The rack price of ethanol is 10 to 15 cents a gallon cheaper than unleaded is here in Oregon, just depending on the fluctuations of the markets. And other people in the room can share with you that and know that better than I do. So what I'm asking you to consider is the various concepts that we're talking about here. One of the pieces that's in place, obviously, is another House bill that mandates a renewable fuel standard for the state. And I support that concept. Now, that's in my entire political career, I've been against mandates unless there are offsetting incentives. And I believe that we have in place a package of bills that creates those offsetting incentives to develop this industry in Oregon. And for the record, let me say, I do not want these incentives to go on forever. I want us to incentivize this industry to get started, and then I want to see those subsidies go away as the industry matures and it becomes profitable on its own. There are individuals who have been in my office that want to build a very, very large biodiesel facility in the Portland area near the port, and have been working with the governor's office on streamlining of regulatory issues that they're dealing with. And they are telling me that in their business model, that they in fact can deliver biodiesel to the pump at a cheaper price than it is low sulfur diesel is being sold today. So we're at that break point. We're at that break point here where it is time for us to move forward. And that's what I'm going to ask you to consider with this package of bills today. There are a lot of opportunities here to utilize the natural resources that we have today in a responsible manner, in a manner that, again, it helps the environment, it reduces our dependence on foreign oil, it keeps American money right here in Oregon producing American jobs and Oregon jobs and helping our rural economies. Those are all good things. And that's why we have a bipartisan support for the direction we're headed with this package of bills. And again, I would ask you very strongly to consider that and would be happy to shut up at this point in time and take any questions.
Any questions of Representative Krupp? Maybe we'll hold on. Can you stay for a while?
I can.
I have just one that comes from the end of the testimony. And thank you very much for your presentation, Representative. Do you have an idea at this point how long the incentives are going to be needed that you were referring to that ought to have a finite time period?
I believe in the pollution control tax credit bill, which is 3031, that we have an amendment to correct this through an oversight. We want to extend the pollution control tax credit for this purpose from 2006, which the current law expires then, and that's in the bill, and that's what we need to amend. We want to extend that to 2012. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, a six-year subsidy is what I have in mind for this type of a circumstance. Some of the market dynamics that are coming into play soon, again, others that are proposing these facilities in the room can share with you their thoughts better than I can. Some of those dynamics of the marketplace are going to necessitate that very soon the opportunity to utilize what we can produce here in terms of ethanol and biodiesel, that opportunity to use those as blending agents in perhaps neighboring states in addition to Oregon is the opportunity, because in 2007 we have new fuel standards coming for diesel, super low sulfur diesel.
Right.
And these are issues that either the petroleum industry is going to go to a different type of an additive to provide lubricity in diesel, or if we can produce biodiesel cheap enough, they will look seriously at our product, especially given the fact that now that the president has signed into law a bill that allows for a 20-cent a gallon blender's tax credit for biodiesel. So there are, that's the reason we want to do this now, is because it makes sense that we would make this happen now. And I will also share with you, in the ethanol processing system that they have in the state of Minnesota, last year Minnesotans subsidized $35 million into the ethanol industry. Sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it? It returned them $587 million in hard dollar economic activity in the rural areas of Minnesota alone. Minnesota is a net exporter of ethanol. They now have put in, and they had a mandate they put in place, and they also put into place incentives to deal with that some years ago. I think, again, that we can create that kind of an opportunity here. If Brazil can do it, if Minnesota can do it, if several other states like Iowa and Kansas, Nebraska can produce ethanol, and starting to produce biodiesel now from a number of sources, soybean oil and those types of things, if they can do it and offer lower priced fuels to their consumers, I think we can do it in Oregon. And I think we have a marvelous opportunity to do that. And that's why I'm urging you to move forward on these package of bills today.
Thank you. Before you do proceed, Representative Dellum, I'd like to bring Representative Dingfelder and Senator Metzger forward. Maybe if you could pull up another chair. Thank you. Then we get all four of you for questions. Great. Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson, and thank you, members of the committee. Representative John Dollum from House District 59. After following Representative Krupp, I feel like a pair of brown shoes sitting next to a tuxedo. My passion is not quite as great as his. I started lining out the things in my testimony that had been covered by Representative Krupp, and down to the thank you, he just about covered everything. But I do want to turn your attention to the House District that I represent. This package of bills represents excellent policy for Oregon east of the Cascades. I come from an ag country. We have, once you get up on the high plateau, which is principally wheat, we have an opportunity for an alternative crop. We have an opportunity for new investment. We have an opportunity to breathe life into the rural communities in House District 59 that are suffering a slow and strangulating demise. And for that reason alone, I would support this package. But I also come from House District 59, which has three of the highest unemployment counties in the state. And when we look at what is used to produce biofuels, this package of legislation offers hope for my district. On the Washburn's Indian Reservation, we were talking the other day with representatives from the reservation, and they're looking at building a bio plant. That bioplant would be built where unemployment is absolutely the highest in the state. Those stubborn numbers that refuse to budge double digits on the Warm Springs Reservation could see perhaps some relief. We also see an opportunity to use forest products. Our forest industry has literally, for small producers, been brought to its knees. And we see this as an opportunity to employ people creating healthy forests, picking up biomass. We have one biomass plant in Prairie City. It principally burns forest mass to boil water, make electricity. This would give us another place to use that product. So after I line out the exciting issues that Representative Krupp covers, and after he tells you about the global issues, I want to tell you what this can do for Eastern Oregon. And it is phenomenal. It is promise. It is hope. And I urge your support of this package of bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Dillon. Shall we let the good senator, having heard you the other day, give you the cleanup position, Representative Dingfelder?
Well, I will be very brief, Mr. Chair. Rick Metzger, state senator from District 26, neither a fifth-generation farmer or a fourth-generation firefighter, but I am a fourth-generation fisherman and a third-generation car lover, and I'm really here to hope that my car can continue to run as we work on finite resources, and I think there's a lot of comments that have already been made. I will not go over those. There's a lot of expertise in the backs of this room, and I know you want to hear from the real experts on that. I'm only here to give you the message that this has strong bipartisan support in the Senate as well. I think it is good policy, and very, very pleased that you're endorsing this product today and this direction for our state. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm here today to offer moral support to my colleague, since you've already heard from me on last Thursday, but wanted to thank you again for hearing these bills and here to answer any questions. You also have a lot of experts in the room that I think you're probably anxious to hear from, but certainly if there's any questions of the panel, we'd be happy to address that.
Could any of you, or probably either of you that are more heavily into it, explain to me and the audience the precise difference between biodiesel and just ethanol, which is being used? What's the basis of either or both?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll take a stab at that, but I think there's more qualified people in the back of the room. Ethanol is primarily for gasoline engines, typically. And biodiesel, the product that we would produce here in Oregon would be a blending agent blended with petroleum diesel to produce B5, B10, B20 biodiesel. You can burn 100% biodiesel in vehicles, by the way. There's small things you need to do, but for up to B20, really you don't have to do anything to your engine at all as in terms of diesel. The advantage, obviously, of burning ethanol is that it is a cleaner burning fuel. And you and I had a conversation, Mr. Chair, that I'm getting the answer to, and I think others in the back room will have the answer to in regards to CO2 emissions and those types of things. As the best I understand it, they're actually less. There are some
for
biodiesel, yes. And ethanol, there are others here who can speak to that more fully than I can.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from the committee?
One thing I would like to add, and I appreciate the comments that Representative Krupp offered, is that one of the beauties of both ethanol and biodiesel as a renewable fuel is that you do not need to do anything to your engine to use these fuels. In other words, you don't have to buy a special car, and I certainly appreciate, and I think several members of the panel of the committee actually have hybrid cars, which we certainly do support. However, you don't have to buy a special car. You don't have to buy a special engine. Unlike hydrogen, you don't have to have lots of millions of dollars of research put into it because we don't have hydrogen is not widely used yet as an option. So that's one of the beauties about biodiesel and ethanol is that it can go into your engine if you have a regular car running on regular fuel or a diesel engine car. And either of those could use ethanol or biodiesel today. Thank you.
Thank you. I had the impression at one point, and it's been helpful for you to explain, that somehow ethanol was part of the biodiesel product, but biodiesel is refined from canola, rapeseed, or... Now, does the cellulosic product, does that also convert to biodiesel or to ethanol or to methanol? Or,
you know, Mr. Chair, instead of me trying to answer that, some of the other people in the room have the expertise to be able to really lay that out for you.
Excellent.
And I just appreciate the opportunity and thank the chair and the committee for letting us bring forward this package of bills to you. I think there's a lot of good things that we can accomplish here that are good policy-wise. There will no doubt have to be some amending of bills and people's concerns to be addressed, and we certainly want to do that. I think there is an opportunity here for us to move ahead in Oregon today and to send a very powerful signal and take advantage of a unique time and opportunity because of our time in history, oil prices being as high as they are, fuel standards changing, market forces being in place, subsidies from the federal government, those things are all, I think, combining for that quote-unquote perfect storm, the right kind of perfect storm that we want to see here in Oregon. And I would hope, Mr. Chair, and you and members of the committee, that you would look favorably on this package of bills, and we're certainly happy to work with you on amending bills and meeting individuals' concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now we will call the Department of Agriculture team back up again. Chuck Craig?
We're done unless there are
questions. Oh, you are. Okay, very good. I don't think we saw any questions at that time. Any questions of department? All right, thank you very much. We next we'll call Mike Graney of the Oregon Department of Energy and Mike Marsh from ODOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Mike Graney. I'm director of the Department of Energy, and with me is Justin Kluwer, who's a technical expert on alternative fuels, including ethanol and biodiesel. And I'd like to briefly talk about the biofuels package in general, and I will be brief because you've heard from a number of witnesses already, and I know you have many more who want to talk. And then I'd like to talk specifically about Senate Bill 736, which you haven't heard specifics on yet, and then Justin is here to respond to some of the technical questions that the committee staff asked us to address about how you actually produce these fuels. The legislation that you have before you, in particular Senate Bill 736 and House Bills 3030 through 3034, the Department strongly supports. I've provided for you a copy of a letter from the Governor endorsing those bills. Many of those ideas came out of the Renewable Energy Action Plan, in which we had two drafts over the last year and had hundreds of people participating in those, and which recently finalized that plan. I've provided copies for you of that. That's the thick document, and it covers all the renewable energy sources, but there's quite a few pages on recommendations for biofuels and bioenergy, most of which are in the package that you have before you today. Let me just mention the importance of this because Oregonians spend over $7 billion a year on energy, and almost half of that is for fuel in the transportation sector. So it's a huge amount of economic impact. And to the extent that we can develop agricultural and forest-based fuels to supplement the fossil fuels we use for transportation, it will be very important both for environmental and for economic reasons. We have a long history of using bioenergy, mostly from forest products and forest waste, but most of that for either electricity generation or for direct space heat. What this package will do will help us move more in the direction of creating fuels for transportation as well. So we think it's very important. Let me turn to Senate Bill 736 briefly, because that's a bill that came over to you from the Senate unanimously. Under current law, there's a process for siting ethanol production facilities on an expedited basis through our siting council if they meet certain criteria that minimize environmental impacts. And that includes, amongst other things, having already received local land use approval, having the material and feedstock either barged in or transported in and out so it'll reduce and minimize traffic congestion and other conditions to minimize environmental impact. What Senate Bill 736 does is expand the exemption to include not only material for ethanol that's from certain farm products, but also grass straw, other crop residues, and forest waste as well. And it also provides the same exemption for biodiesel facilities. And when we first asked that this legislation be introduced some years ago, biodiesel production facilities really weren't on the screen, nor were these other technologies. Under this process, the applicant actually does request an exemption from the siting council, so the department reviews the application, makes sure it meets the criteria, but it does provide an expedited basis and reduces the review time from 9 months or more to about 2 months. That's the substance of Senate Bill 736. I encourage you to act on that as soon as possible as well. Mr. Chairman, there, I'd like to ask Justin Clure to address a couple of technical issues that came up in testimony that your staff asked us to address as well.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Justin Clure. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Oregon Department of Energy. And I just want to take a few minutes here to clarify some of the terminology that's been used in these hearings, specifically in regards to the opportunities here in Oregon with relation to both biodiesel and ethanol, and then speak briefly on the specifics of converting biomass to ethanol in this case. Ethanol can be converted or produced from corn or cellulosic biomass feedstock, and that's a distinction that that needs to be clear. Ethanol made from cellulosic biomass materials, it's sometimes referred to as bioethanol, is different than that made from starch, such as corn. Examples of cellulosic biomass feedstocks would be the wood waste, agricultural residues, fast-growing grasses and trees, and even paper for that matter. U.S. production of ethanol traditionally is made from starch crops, such as corn. The ethanol is basically derived from the sugar, and it's essentially much easier to derive sugar from corn than it is from the cellulosic feedstock opportunities. However, there is emerging technologies aimed at converting biomass to ethanol, and I think we'll hear more about that this afternoon from some of the other experts. With some of those challenges in play here, our priorities are essentially to develop those opportunities here for Oregon on the biomass to ethanol conversion. We can continue, or we could actually not continue, but we could be railing in corn as a feedstock, but obviously it's much more efficient for a lot of the opportunities discussed to be growing our own feedstock for the production of ethanol. We're currently supporting some of these R&D efforts with a firm in Montana that is studying how we would go about doing that, that is converting the biomass to ethanol, and with a priority focusing on Oregon wood and ag products. Now, biodiesel, on the other hand, is currently most popular way to do that is deriving it from soybeans. However, Oregon can also grow oil seed plants that's been mentioned, such as canola, for this process. Waste grease can also be used to create biodiesel, and tapping into that waste stream seems to be a pretty good option for some of these production facilities to get going. However, the virgin vegetable oil is a better feedstock. It produces a better quality of fuel.
Can I just ask you? You can take restaurant greases and convert them directly into biodiesel.
That's correct.
But not as pure as the grapeseed.
The end product isn't the same quality as would be. However, there are benefits then to tying into that waste stream rather than producing a feedstock for the purposes of biodiesel solely. So.
And those restaurant greases would come from vegetable oils in the first place.
Correct.
Okay.
And just to touch on a few other projects that we're pursuing, we're working with the DAS Motor Pool right now to develop some of the infrastructure for ethanol. The 10% blend that's being proposed requires no engine modifications. There is also what's referred to as E85 that requires some slight engine modifications, and actually these vehicles are readily available, and the State Motor Pool actually owns quite a few of these vehicles, but there are no fueling stations available to fuel these cars. So our goal is to set up an infrastructure along I-5 to where we can actually fuel these vehicles with E85. They're referred to as flex fuel vehicles, and you can either put conventional gasoline in them or E85, and we're looking at developing the infrastructure needed to run these vehicles on E85. E85 essentially is an 85% blend of ethanol with a 15% blend of gasoline. So it is a higher concentrate of the alcohol fuel as compared to what's referred to as E10, which is the 10% ethanol, 90% gasoline. again, to reiterate, the bills that are being proposed here don't require any engine modifications, but it is something down the line that we would be looking at pursuing with E85 as a higher blended fuel than the E10. Just to wrap up, I think you know, the biofuels industry relies both on some of these technological issues to be ironed out as well as these political actions, and so you know, these discussions are all part of that process. So with that, I'd end my testimony and open up to questions.
Great. Any questions from either Mike or Justin? All right. Please, Mike.
Mr. Chair, Mike Marsh, Deputy Director of the Department of Transportation, here to present on House Bill 3034. The Department of Transportation is your collector of Oregon's diesel tax as it relates to vehicles that are less than 26,000 pounds. What the bill would do is to reduce the amount of tax on that diesel fuel, and to do it on a basis of 1% for each 1% of biodiesel in the blend. We're obviously encouraging the use of biodiesel. I just wanted to make sure that there was also mention of the fact that as this occurs, it would decrease the amount of funds available to build and maintain the state, county, and city roads. The Legislative Revenue Office is indicating that the impact by the 09-11 biennium would be $1.7 million for that biennium. That assumes modest success in the incentive. If the analysis and result of these incentives, as well as improved technology, results in significantly higher sales, it would further reduce the amount of revenue available for those roads. On the other hand, we also are the tax administrator for this function and did want to make sure that there was a clear definition of biodiesel in the bill, and would ask that that be included. So the two things we'd like to suggest, Mr. Chair, are one, the bill would sunset the incentives in 2012. We'd propose that the incentives might end if a certain threshold was reached, whatever the committee deemed appropriate, but maybe $1 million for a fiscal year would be a way to approach that type of a cap. And the second thing is to ensure that there is a definition of biodiesel, such as the definition that's included in House Bill 3033, that makes it clear for tax administration. Mr. Chair, we appreciate the openness of the proponents of the bill to consideration of the issues, and are obviously encouraging the use of environmentally friendly renewable resources like this that do help create jobs, and I'm open to any questions.
Questions from the committee? Would you, Mike, explain a little bit more of the $1 million for a fiscal year? Is that with 2012 or replacing 2012 as a sunset?
The idea, Mr. Chair, would be to have that replace the 2012 so it would be a cap if that threshold was reached, or whatever threshold the committee deemed appropriate.
And I didn't catch what the $1 million...
That would be the amount of discount, Mr. Chair.
If it exceeds,
in other words,
$1 million.
Lost revenue to the state. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Next, I'm going to call on Katie first, and from Farm Bureau, and John Ledger from AOI. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Our membership is excited and interested in the potential that a healthy biofuels industry could provide to agriculture in the state of Oregon. However, there are some concerns that I just want to bring up regarding canola in the Willamette Valley, and I think you heard some of that from the Department of Agriculture today. We have members concerned about potential impacts from disease, cross-pollination, weed control, and pests as well. And we're supportive of the department's efforts with management of the control areas and also tightening the restrictions in the control districts as well. With that being said, I think there's going to be some discussions coming in the next week or so on if the department is adequately funded or staffed to handle the management of these control districts. And there might need to be an additional FTE or some additional funding going to the department for the control district management and addressing some of the issues that they're going to need to face as a biodiesel industry develops in the state of Oregon. With that being said, I'll move on to the package of bills that you're addressing today. Farm Bureau is supportive of 3030, which expands the property tax exemption for ethanol facilities and also includes biofuel production facilities. We feel that this legislation hasn't been used yet, or the exemption hasn't been used yet, because just the time wasn't right for the ethanol industry to move to the state of Oregon. But currently we have numerous companies looking to invest here and looking to buy Oregon crops, and we're interested in continuing that exemption for the ethanol industry and adding it to biofuels. Farm Bureau supports the concept in 3031 to expand the pollution control tax credit to include biofuel production facilities. New storage and production facilities are going to be important to the development of a biofuels industry, and then also the storage facilities are going to be helpful for us in preventing the release or mixing of canola seed with other commodities and farm types. However, we have some concerns about trading that tax credit possibly with the field burning tax credit that the grass seed and wheat industry use to control the waste of straw on their fields. Instead of burning their fields, they're now baling the straw and storing it, and that's where the storage facilities is where they utilize that tax credit. We would not support trading one for the other, but instead of adding the storage and production facilities for biofuels to the pollution control tax credit, or also talking about adding that to the business energy tax credit. We see that would be a good fit for Betsy and a good place to put it instead. And also it would not have the controversy of the sunset that the pollution control tax credit is facing right now. Farm Bureau is supportive of 3032, which establishes the tax income tax credits for agricultural producers producing biodiesel or ethanol in the state. This is an incentive that farmers would benefit from as they're going to need to purchase new equipment, possibly increase equipment cleaning due to contamination issues, and invest in other farm changes, and we're supportive of that subsidy for a limited amount of time. Farm Bureau is also supportive of 3033, which is a renewable fuel standard. We have policy in support of the standard and feel that it would benefit Oregon agriculture. However, we would want to amend that standard for it to be based on in-state production instead of a solid number. Our members have concern that this product could be processed in other states or in Canada, and the fuel shipped to Oregon, as we see with currently with our petroleum industry. That doesn't help Oregon's economy. That doesn't help Oregon agriculture. This would be similar to how Minnesota, I believe, started their programs, and the same legislation that Montana's legislature is looking at currently as well, based on in-state capacity instead of solid percentages. We are in opposition of 3034, which is the reduction of fuel tax when using biodiesel. Our industry feels that no matter what the truck is burning, it has the same impact to Oregon roads, and a strong road infrastructure is important to moving our farm commodities throughout the state from the field to the market. And our members cannot support a reduction in the fuel tax just for the type of fuel you're burning, nor do they want the 100% reduction in the fuel tax when they use biodiesel as well. We are also in opposition of 3035, which is the Department of Education grant program for upgrading of school buses. We have concerns about the impact that'll have at the fuel stations and at the fuel price. This is a program that the Oregon Department of Agriculture administers, and they're looking at, I believe, having to increase that fee in the next few years as well, and this will be a double hit to the fuel stations. While it's not in my written testimony, we are supportive of Senate Bill 736 and would like to see that legislation move forward. And I'd also like to add, on Tuesday, Representative Burley talked about adding biomass to some of these bills, and we are interested in entering into that discussion and seeing how the timber industry can join with the agriculture industry in this package of bills. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Hearing none, John. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Ledger, Associated Oregon Industries. I'm going to be speaking briefly to 3031, and we do have some amendments for that. But there are a couple of things that we saw in that bill I think just needed to be corrected. First of all, there was no date. One of the things that needed to be done in that bill was it needed an extension date. There was no extension date in the bill. So we'd really be amending this program into a bill that was expiring, a program that was expiring. It's been re-upped every so many years since 1968 when it was started by Tom McCall. And so we would propose putting a date in there. The trigger dates are commencing construction. You have to build by a certain date in order to be eligible. You don't get the tax credit until you after you've hired people and built it. In the dash ones, I think actually the extension date is 2016. You would have to actually, which is, and normally it's been reviewed in 10-year increments, you'd have to actually commence construction by then. The other thing that is in the dash ones is we did put back in the field burning piece, so that wouldn't be taken out. And we were looking for something else to address that issue a little bit. And one of the really odd things that happened with this bill, with the Pollution Control Tax Credit Program, and it was not ill-intentioned, DEQ some years ago started allowing chippers to be eligible for the Pollution Control Tax Credit Program, whereby instead of burning wood, you chip it and you use it as mulch, which is a good idea. But they didn't put any base on how small a chipper you could buy. So people were buying small chippers at Sears or whatever, and you can't burn your fields or, you know, in Multnomah County or whatever. And people were buying home chippers, a lot of them. It wasn't a huge amount of money, but it was a lot. And what we're proposing is that we put a limit on that of 100 horsepower or more. And when you look, and I know more about chippers than I ever wanted to know researching this, but that's a big chipper. And it takes out about 90% of the chippers. So it would be a chipper that somebody who normally would clear a field, do land clearing, and torch it off, which emits a whole bunch of pollution. I mean, more than you can imagine. That then they would still be, the DQ program would still bring them in, because that would be the intent. But I couldn't go down to Sears and buy a 10 horsepower chipper and get a credit for it. So, yeah, if you're thinking about getting one,
do it now.
But that does balance that off a bit. And I'm not exactly sure of the numbers. I tried running them on my Excel sheet, and it's not a whole lot of money. It's a lot of chippers, hundreds of thousands of dollars, though.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Barnard.
Mr. Ledger, I'm convinced that you're serious about this, since you raised the same issue before the Revenue Committee that I was on 2 years ago.
Yes.
And you've convinced me.
Mr. Chair, did you buy a chipper?
No.
Well, you should. but we think that you know, when you just think, I used to run, as some of you know, I used to run a state air programs for years, another state, and they burned fields there also. And the grass seed business is a very strong, important business, and it's rural. And so it just seems like, you know, it's not a good thing to trade that off against when we want something that reduces pollution and is rural, when we can do it with some other mechanism. The other thing is, and it's really astounding, when you look at this program, the fiscal effect is very small. I mean, we're talking, or it's amazing. The other things I quickly wanted to mention, we put in language because we weren't sure if CO2 was a pollutant or not. So we just put in language in the dash ones that say that refer to climate change, that would do things that protect climate change. We also reestablished the two-tier system that the pollution control tax credit has had for years. That is, if you go above and beyond, or if you're one of these facilities, you get a higher credit than not. We think it's a good program. This is the Economic and Community Development's flyer that they give out to companies when they're trying to steal them away from other states. And there's not a whole lot of stuff in there, but one of the things is the pollution control tax credit. They do use that to bring companies here. So we think that would solve some of these problems, and we think it would help both these types of facilities and business in general. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for containing your testimony as well. We do have a long list. I'm going to call Kelsey Wilson and Damiana Merriweather next. Kelsey, present? Yes.
I have a few things that John and I agree about.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I am here today representing Union Pacific Railroad. Thank you for the opportunity to appear this afternoon and voice our concerns with House Bill 3033. The inclusion of locomotives in this mandate would simply be detrimental to our business. Union Pacific Railroad owns 7,056 diesel locomotives that cost an average of $1.8 million each. That's $12.7 billion worth of diesel locomotives. We will buy 315 new locomotives this year and lease an additional 230, a total of 545 new locomotives in 2005. Our diesel engines range from 2,000 horsepower to 6,000 horsepower. The majority operate at 4,000 horsepower. The average diesel locomotives last 13.56 years with constant care and maintenance. Although commonly called diesels, our locomotives are actually electrically driven, electromotive diesels. The diesel engine drives an alternator, which produces electricity to run electric motors mounted on the locomotive axles. General Electric, the locomotive manufacturer, has notified all users of their diesel engines that the fuel used must meet exact specifications or their warranties will be voided. To mandate that diesel in Oregon include biodiesel would severely endanger all of the warranties on our locomotives. Minnesota, the only state to have passed a similar law, did so in 2002. They require that all diesels sold in their state contain 2% biodiesel. However, in Minnesota, as we would like to do here in Oregon, there were three exemptions made in their law. Motors located at an electrical generating plant, railroad locomotives, and certain off-road mining equipment. As the largest owners of diesel engines in the country, we respectfully ask that House Bill 3033 be amended to specifically exempt locomotives, diesel engines from the jurisdiction of House Bill 3033. Thank you for the opportunity to bring our concerns to the table, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Damiana Merriweather, and I am here today on behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon. And in general, I am here to express the Lung Association's support. I should give you a little context. The Lung Association is the oldest nationwide nonprofit public health entity in Oregon, and they are dedicated to fighting lung disease and promoting lung health. In broad terms, we're here in support of a broad spectrum of efforts that are being made in order to promote low emissions vehicles and clean burning fuels, including low sulfur diesel fuels. In particular, I am here to speak to House Bill 3035 today, which establishes the Clean Bus Grant Fund. And this is a grant fund that would allow grants to be granted to school districts in order to upgrade their diesel burning school buses to burn more efficient biodiesel fuels. Traditional diesel engines are the number one source of airborne toxins in Oregon, and the toxins and particulate pollution from diesel engines have been linked to asthma, lung and respiratory disease, and heart disease. Children, the elderly, and those with already weakened immune systems are the most vulnerable to the impacts of these toxins and particulates. Children alone account for a growing population of asthma sufferers, and childhood asthma is an ever-growing problem across the state. 63,000 Oregonian children suffer from asthma, and this illness can be both just disabling as well as life-threatening in many cases. We recognize that there are many sources of vehicle emissions from diesel and that one solution won't solve the problem altogether. And we'd actually like to recognize the steps that the governor's already taken in reducing emissions from idling diesel trucks by promoting the plug-in program along the I-5 corridor for truckers to plug in overnight so they don't leave their engines running. We think House Bill 3035 is another valuable tool in helping address another major issue, point source for these types of diesel pollution. Cleaning up school buses helps in reducing overall diesel pollution and would make a direct impact on children who are most vulnerable to some of the most harmful impacts. With that, I'd be happy to take your questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Any questions of either of these two panelists? All right, thank you both. I'm going to break in Larry Price, I believe, is our furthest traveler, so I'm going to ask Larry to come on up, and then Thomas Endicott and John Miller. Thomas? Okay, great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Laurie Price. I farm in far eastern Oregon. I live along the banks of the Snake River, adjacent to the Idaho-Oregon border. I raise alfalfa seed and grain and barley seed, and am a member of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. Been a member for several years, serving on the board as Niagara County President. The Oregon Wheat Growers League has been a trade association representing wheat and barley producers in the state. And this association has started in 1926. Their philosophy has been to collaborate and be proactive in the solution-oriented thinking, and continues to be in that form for the last 79 years. It pleases me to be here to address you on this package of bills. The Oregon Wheat Growers League is pleased to speak in favor of this legislation, which would not only inspire entrepreneurial thinking for the processors who will be anxious to participate in the biofuel industry, but also generate new market demands for the commodities grown in Oregon farmers. New markets mean new opportunities for growers who are facing global competition, increased regulatory burdens, and escalating costs of labor, fuel, transportation, equipment, and much more. As growers, we compete in the global market today, and a lot of what we do is to compete with nations that are less regulated. And for your information, 85% of the wheat in the Northwest, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, is exported through the Port of Portland to foreign countries. We are concerned about looking at new domestic markets, and my testimony says new domestic markets demands other biofuel processes, which will create new partnership opportunities between growers and processors. Currently, the majority of producers transport their crops to market upon harvesting results, resulting in low cash price for growers and a glut of raw commodity in the marketplace. Increased on farm storage will create a strategic market opportunity which better serves both parties. Better inventory management for processors and better cash management for producers. A reliable and affordable transportation system tends to be the result of strong market demand. Currently, farm commodities tend to move by barge and rail and truck from the Port of Portland or to Lewiston, Idaho, if you grow crops in the counties of Malheur County or Wallowa. Increased demand for raw commodities by new processing facilities, which may be sited in Malheur County and other upriver locations, may serve as a catalyst for transportation of raw commodities upcountry. Commodity processed closer to their point of origin will result in reduced wear and tear and congestion on Oregon highways for the transportation of our product. I picked up an article from this trade magazine, and it's called Top Producer. It talks about monster crops. Are the 11 billion bushels of corn enough to feed ethanol and export? And it addresses the Iowa issue, and this economist, Bob Weiser from Iowa State University, talks about the ethanol industry's development in Iowa, and in the last 5 years, the construction of facilities upriver have caused the movement of corn to change directions. It's flowing upstream. Normally it was flowing downstream to the port, and now it's staying inland. And because of that, there is a strong demand for upland storage. Along with this, the advantage that the growers have seen is an increase in price. And Mr. Weisner says there are times in northwest Iowa where ethanol plants temporarily paid 13 cents over the nearby futures compared to the 20 cent reduction for upland wheat, upland corn. One of the things I see as a major stumbling block for growers will be the ability to change the direction and the thought patterns of how they market their product. Presently, all the pricing systems designed to discount off transportation off of Port of Portland. For example, where I live, roughly 400 miles from the port, we're discounted almost a dollar a hundredweight. And that's just transportation cost. What I envision happening as facilities start up river, that transportation cost will never not be an issue. There'll be a competition to bring that flow upward. The biggest dilemma will be, as growers in my area, once wheat is harvested, their concern is to get rid of it, get it down river, get it out of their hands. What I see the need to have, and the bill and the tax incentives on construction of storage facilities within this bill, package of bills, would allow growers to purchase on-farm storage. Presently, like I said, they're marketing immediately harvest. A lot of these contracts I perceive would have to be 9-10 month out contracts, so they'd be a delivery contract, and where most growers aren't used to that concept. In my seed operation at home, we do contracting both on the Oregon and Idaho side of the river. Our biggest dilemma in that process is finding storage. There is a proposed site in Malheur County. That facility, if completed, it has been said that it will use about 3 million metric ton of wheat. What is that? That's 10% of the wheat production in the state of Oregon, which is a big volume. Or all the if you brought it all out of Malheur County, Malheur County produces 10% of the wheat production. Yes, there will be competition across state lines. What I see this bill doing, as far as the tax incentives, would be allow us as Oregon producers to be competitive with have a competitive advantage over my cohorts on the Idaho side. Because the real dilemma in the facility that's proposed in Ontario, Oregon, would be to maintain the production on the Oregon side.
if we had those, I mean, the tax credit incentive will be that catalyst to make us to be more competitive, have a tax an advantage over the Idaho growth. Right now, presently, Idaho has the lowest, one of the lowest labor wages, lower income tax, lower property tax, and we have to, right on the line, compete with that. I see that this will be, this tax incentives will allow growers to have that jump start. Once the facilities are built, people will continue to go down that route. I think that's the smartest thing to do within this bill from that perspective. Because people are creatures of pattern and nature, and it's very hard to change. If there's incentives there, I think we'll change. Other issues, one of the other issues in my testimony there talks about the decline in barley acres. We're in the lowest barley acres in the nation since 1930s. When I started selling seed in the late 70s, early 80s in our operation, there was 235,000 acres of barley grown in the state of Oregon. Presently, there's only 60,000. Some of these facilities, this facility in Ontario was talking about using a waxy barley. And if they do everything they say they're going to do, they would use more barley than is already produced in the state of Oregon. So there has to be a whole structural change as to where these commodities are coming from. So I think there's a real advantage of having that storage closer to those units, specifically places like Baker and Wallowa County, which normally move their product toward Pendleton. And I see there's some real advantages. It's always harder to move product upriver. I can never sell seed to Twin Falls or to Burley or Rupert, but I can sell all day long downriver to Pendleton, Walla Walla, because it's the freight advantage that's already discounted. So I see this as a real opportunity for that Ontario facility. I've deviated from my testimony. There's other testimony there just for periods of time. But I think that tax incentive is probably the more important thing. You know, a lot of times tax incentives are based for processors and never think about the grower. The one issue that we need to consider and you need to consider is how do we encourage the processors to use Oregon product. And that's our concern as wheat growers, that it would be a big downfall, but we would give processors tax incentives, and all of a sudden they are importing corn from Iowa, most likely Nebraska. Iowa is already a net importer, or canola out of Canada. And I think that's an issue that has to be addressed. Other than that, is there any other questions?
Thank you very much, Larry. Appreciate you coming so far.
Thank you.
Thomas.
Representative Terry Anderson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Thomas Endicott. I'm managing partner of Sequential Biofuels, LLC. We are a biofuels marketing and distribution company that has offices both in Portland and in Eugene. I appreciate the opportunity to come and present testimony on these biofuels-related bills today. In partnership with regional fuel distributors, Sequential provides commercial biodiesel and biodiesel petroleum diesel blends to businesses, governments, and individuals throughout Oregon. Sequential maintains card lock locations, retail pumps, and affiliated bulk outlets for pure biodiesel and biodiesel petroleum diesel blends in Portland, Eugene, Roseburg, Medford, Phoenix, Corvallis, McMinnville, and Hood River Parkdale. So we move the fuel, and we've moved the fuel since August of 2002 when we founded our company. We've moved, I would say, in excess of 500,000 gallons of pure biodiesel in Oregon over the last almost 2.5 years. Sequential Biofuels is working to expand the fleet and retail markets for biodiesel throughout the Pacific Northwest, and we continue to build relationships with liquid fuel distributors and retail station owners to increase points of distribution for biodiesel. We also continue to research and pursue the feasibility for producing biofuels as well as other bio-based products from feedstocks collected or produced in the Pacific Northwest. And before I get into the bill specifically, I'd like to say, first of all, that I want to commend the Oregon Department of Energy, Oregon Department of Agriculture, Department of Environmental Quality, Oregon Department of Community and Economic Development, for the work that they've done over the last couple of years. I was a member of Jeff Krupp's biofuels work group back in the fall of 2002. Members of all of those agencies have been involved in this discussion for the past 2.5 years, and I think we've made significant headway. And on that note, I also have to give great kudos to the two that have become known as the odd couple, Representatives Krupp and Dingfelder, and also to the Oregon Environmental Council, who's really stepped up in the past 6 months to a year and provided a lot of energy to biofuels legislation in Oregon. On the bill specifically, Sequential Biofuels supports the entire package of bills and especially supports House Bill 3034. As an Oregon business and as a corporate citizen of the state, Sequential believes that the production and consumption of biofuels, both biodiesel and ethanol, in Oregon creates social, economic, and environmental impacts that the legislature should encourage and support. Point one, fossil fuel consumption is a leak to Oregon's economy. Oregon's economy and the U.S. economy are powered by fossil fuels. There's no question about that. The U.S. uses about 57 billion gallons of diesel every year and about 120 billion gallons of gasoline. Significant amount of fuel, a significant amount of money. As Representative Krupp mentioned, $7 trillion exported out of our economy over the last period of time that he mentioned. In the transportation sector, we rely on gasoline and diesel fuel to distribute people, goods, and services throughout the country. And at the current rates of consumption, which I just mentioned, biofuels will never replace conventional petroleum fuels. But they can augment supply of petroleum fuels while enhancing Oregon's economy and the environment. And I think over the last 2.5 years, the discussion has really been about biofuels as an economic driver in Oregon. As Oregon has no oil wells and no petroleum refineries, perhaps as much as 80% of the value of every gallon of gasoline and diesel fuel consumed in the state is exported outside of the state. In Oregon, that represents roughly 720 million gallons of diesel fuel every year and 1.4 billion gallons of gasoline every year. This volume of fuel represents not only a significant amount of dollars, but also a potential number of jobs that could be retained within the state. If biodiesel and ethanol were produced in Oregon at a level that could capture only a tiny fraction of the total volume of petroleum fuels used here, and the bills, several of the bills talk to 2 to 5% of the total consumption, Oregon could experience a significant increase in job growth and tax revenue attributed to the biofuels production industry. As global demand for petroleum products outpaces global supply, and this is largely a result of pressure from expanding economies like China and India, crude oil prices will continue to rise. Goldman Sachs and other energy analysts have suggested that the price of crude oil will likely rise from the current $50 per barrel to between $80 and $100 per barrel over the next 2 years. This translates into gasoline and diesel fuel prices in excess of $3 per gallon at the pump. And it's only my personal opinion, but I would not expect that price to come down at all, ever. As this trend continues, the benefit that biofuels can provide to the Oregon economy, both from an energy security perspective and from a state revenue perspective, could be significant. Point number two, the market for biofuels has arrived. Roughly 60 million gallons of ethanol are currently consumed in Oregon annually as an oxygenate and as an air quality improver for gasoline. Since March of 2002, the market for commercial biodiesel in Oregon has grown from practically zero annual gallons to nearly 1 million gallons per year this year in Oregon. And in fact, the market in Washington is about twice that. Consumers of biodiesel include hundreds of individual drivers, quite a few of which you may have seen here on Biofuels Lobby Day in the beginning of March. Private companies like Rexius Forest Products of Eugene and Neil Kelly of Portland, educational institutions including the University of Oregon, Oregon State University, and Reed College, and a number of municipal fleets in the state including the cities of Eugene, Corvallis, and Portland, and Multnomah County. Currently, all the ethanol and biodiesel consumed in Oregon is imported, generally from the corn and soy-producing regions of the Midwestern United States. Although the ethanol and biodiesel imported into Oregon from these Midwest states improves the air quality in the state, imported biofuels do little more than the imported petroleum fuels to enhance Oregon's economy or to support Oregon's agricultural industries. Point three, biodiesel production in Oregon requires greater market development. Growth in the national biodiesel market over the last 4 years can be attributed to high price of petroleum fuels and to federal incentives like the Energy Policy Act of 1992 and a federal excise tax credit that is a provision of the American Jobs Creation Act of 2004, signed into law by President Bush last October. That was the bill that Representative Krupp mentioned, and the incentive on biodiesel is actually $1 per gallon for biodiesel, virgin oil biodiesel that's blended with soybean oil. And in fact, that's helped Sequential to drop our price on 99% biodiesel at the pump in Portland from $3.63 last week to $3.10 this week. So that federal incentive has helped significantly in Oregon, and nationwide it has increased the demand on existing supply quite a bit. Without added incentives from the state, volumes of biodiesel imported from the Midwest and consumed in Oregon will continue to grow steadily. If we do nothing here, the market will continue to grow. If markets for biodiesel in Oregon increase to a threshold level, however, biodiesel producers will develop operations in Oregon. And I fully believe it's the lack of market here that has not spawned a biodiesel production facility in Oregon as yet. Sequential believes that the threshold market level needed to support commercial biodiesel production in Oregon is in the range of 10 million gallons per year. And that's approximately the market created by a 2% biodiesel renewable fuels performance standard for diesel fuel in Oregon, as outlined in House Bill 3033. As a comparable example, when Minnesota passed a 2% biodiesel renewable performance standard for diesel fuel, it created a market for 8 million gallons per year of diesel fuel. That's 2% of the Minnesota market consumed in Minnesota. In actuality, however, what that did was spawned 1 3-million-gallon facility and 2 30-million-gallon facilities in Minnesota. So after this year, Minnesota will be producing in excess of 60 million gallons of biodiesel per year. And the first of those facilities comes online this summer. As a transition to threshold market levels for biodiesel in Oregon, Sequential wants to express greatest support for HB 3034. Sequential believes that requiring the state government to use at least 5% biodiesel for all of its diesel consumption will create a negligible increase to the state's overall fuel budget. Likewise, as diesel passenger vehicles make up less than 1% of all passenger vehicles in the U.S., very, very small percentage, reduction to state road tax on biodiesel blends for lightweight diesel vehicles will create a minor reduction in the state road tax revenue. And I think you heard the gentleman from ODOT mention perhaps $1 million per year, and I can't imagine how big that road budget is. I know it's significant. The sum effect of both of these provisions of HB 3034 is that the state will make a small investment in the emerging biofuels industry in Oregon, and that investment will create returns to the state in jobs and tax revenue over time. Finally, Sequential believes that the development of biodiesel production industry in Oregon will encourage research and development of commercial oilseed production in Oregon. Many researchers at Oregon State University, from chemical engineering to soil and crop sciences departments, are excited by the prospects of developing new processes and products that could be derived from agricultural crops that can be produced and processed in Oregon. Creating a significant market for biodiesel in Oregon is the first step in creating future opportunities for Oregon businesses and for unleashing the ingenuity of Oregon research institutions that envision the opportunities and rewards afforded by an emerging bio-based products industry in Oregon. To wrap up, Sequential Biofuels urges that the House Environment Committee pass this package of biofuels-related bills, especially HB 3034, out of this committee so that the full Oregon House and Senate will have the opportunity to exercise its collective vision and its political will to support the emerging industries of biofuels processing and oilseed crop production as a vote of confidence for a more sustainable, more renewable, and more prosperous future for all Oregonians. I appreciate you taking my testimony, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. No questions at this time.
I would like to provide two clarifications from previous testimony. Justin Clure from Office of Energy mentioned that waste vegetable biodiesel is not as good a fuel as virgin oil biodiesel. That is not true. They're both made to the same ASTM certification. It is more difficult to make biodiesel from waste vegetable oil, but the finished product made to ASTM certification is equally good in quality, especially as a blending stock. And that's it. Thank you. Oh, one other thing. In terms of the information from the railroad, this has been an issue for original engine manufacturers for a number of years with biodiesel. Original engine manufacturers have no right to void any warranty based on fuel. The fuel is the responsibility of the fuel provider, and the engine manufacturer warrants the workmanship and materials in the engine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have heard some controversy on that issue in catalysts and other forms of additives, but we'll pursue that with you individually. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Anderson and rest of the committee. My name is John Miller, and I'm president of Mahonia Vineyards and Nursery, which is a farming operation here in the Mid-Willamette Valley. And I support this package of bills for a lot of reasons. We've been using biodiesel on our farm for over a year, B20, and we've experienced no problems whatsoever in using it. We began because it seemed like the right thing to do for the environment, but it's turned out to be a good economic decision. And as farmers, we're interested in having the opportunity to grow biodiesel crops in the Willamette Valley. Director Koba's comments about the work that the plant division is doing is really encouraging. I'm glad I'm not them in terms of mediating between the specialty folks and the others, but I'm sure they're going to come up with a way for this to happen without a lot of dissonance. The business benefits are it's a direct economic advantage for us to use it now, which it wasn't before, but when you take the externalities like the value of clean air or the revenue of crops that we can grow to produce biodiesel here instead of shipping it in from the Midwest, my guess is the overall benefit is great when you compare it to the small cost of these incentives. But the industry does need a jump start, and I think that this legislation will help that, and I think the industry will stand on its own feet after that very easily. I noticed this morning that the consumer price index went up, I think, 0.7% in March. The base elements went up 0.1%. Most of the rest of it was fuel. That's nationwide, of course, but we're all experiencing that to a great degree. I think the issue of the school buses using the biodiesel, our experience has been with new and old vehicles that we've just seamlessly converted. And I know that the school districts, for the most part, buy in bulk and service from a central location. So I think some encouragement in that arena makes sense. I'm not sure that the right way to do it is to the surcharge on the licenses, but some encouragement should be done. It's kids that are going to be riding in those, and they're the ones that are going to be sitting in all of our chairs in the next generation, and that's a good example for us to give them. And finally, the fact that the reclaimed oil from restaurants can be used here in Oregon to make biodiesel means we won't have to import it from the Midwest, and it also means that I can resume having an occasional Big Mac with fries. Any questions?
Thank you all. Appreciate it very much. I think we're going to have time for one more panel. I regret that we couldn't get you all in today. I think everybody has moved quite rapidly. I'm going to call Rick Franklin, Carolyn Stein, and Don Emerson. And I would ask, we have another hearing coming right after this at 3 o'clock, so I would encourage you to emphasize the points that you haven't heard before as best you can. But we welcome your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Rick Franklin. I'm one of the owners and manager of the American Alternative Energy. It's a company that was designed and is operating in Oregon for alternative fuels. Our operations are in Portland, a metro region in Vancouver, Washington. We own and operate 8 wood waste facilities that produce about 60% of the biomass waste in the Portland metro region. And we handle those tons every day. Jeff Croft has asked me to come and explain to you a little bit about our technology. been working on this technology for 4 years. It's a new technology. It's state-of-the-art. We have a pilot plant in construction right now. It'll be finished in October or November of this year. And its testing will be done by the end of December. Based upon those results of that pilot plant, we will build a large plant that will be constructed in the Portland metro area. The technology is taking the wood waste and the carbon that's in the wood and extracting it out and making gas. That gas is taken to a biodiesel level and or an ethanol level. So that's basically the long and short of it. In our operation, unlike the agricultural side, our operation is not distillation. Distillation generates a lot of water. We in our operation, there's no water at all. So that's a long and short of it. It's a proprietary information technology, which will be coming forth. I just wanted to, he asked me to come and share that with you folks.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Tell me, the wood breakdown would end up as ethanol or as biodiesel?
Well, let me tell you the layman terms of it, because there's a lot of engineers here, so you and I can understand it.
Okay.
The first breakdown of the wood from wood into carbon will go to a medium BTU gas, which is the natural gas. From that natural gas, you can take, refine it one more time, and it would come into biodiesel. And or you can take the natural gas and refine it into the level of ethanol, which is a spice mix. So this gasification system that we're developing has all those characteristics and abilities.
And give me an idea of what it would sell for if you had a gallon of biodiesel from the wood technology right now.
About $1.50 a gallon. Okay. Is where we're at.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. This plant that we're designing and developing is modular in design. 200 bone dried ton plant a day is which we have designed for the Portland region where we operate currently. The footprint of that plant is about 200 feet square, which is one acre. So it's a modular design. The reason we designed that is so that we can change the technology as it evolves, and obviously the cost of construction.
So. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Would you like to follow?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carolyn Stein. For lack of a better term, I'm a soccer mom, and I'm not here today as an expert on biofuels or a member of any organization or company, but as a user of biodiesel for the past 2.5 years and as a mother of two small children. In 2002, my then 3-year-old son was diagnosed with asthma. As parents searching for answers, my husband and I did everything we could to make changes that would help our son. We threw out feather pillows, changed detergents, and began an aggressive and costly regimen of drug therapy. Of equal importance was our ability to run our car on 100% biodiesel. Out of our search for answers came a clear understanding of the dangers of the airborne toxins that are affecting our son's health. In Oregon, the number one airborne toxin is diesel exhaust. Pollution from diesel exhaust has been linked to lung cancer, allergies, upper respiratory illnesses, including asthma. And since children have more rapid respiratory rates and spend 50% more time outside engaged in strenuous activity than do adults, they are particularly susceptible to the negative effects of diesel gases and particulates. Even more alarming, there are approximately 5,000 diesel engine school buses statewide that transport our children to and from school every single day. And a study confirms that the diesel levels inside those school buses are actually 23 to 46% higher than those at street level. To date, there is no known safe level of exposure to diesel emissions. According to the Oregon Department of Human Services, 300,000 Oregonians are estimated to have asthma, 74,000 of which are children. Nationally, 14 million school days are missed each year due to asthma, and it is a leading cause of school absenteeism in children with chronic illness. It is a shame to think that the writing riding a school bus is making our children sick. Fortunately, there's an option. House Bill 3035 will provide funds to Oregon school districts so they can clean up their fleets. Retrofits to older buses and the use of ultra-low sulfur diesel are a step in the right direction. Better still, funding must be provided to school districts for pilot projects utilizing biodiesel. Biodiesel can be easily used in a 20% blend with petroleum with no modifications to the state's existing buses. A B20 blend cuts particulate pollution by 10 to 20%, carbon monoxide by 10 to 20%, hydrocarbons by 10 to 30%, and carcinogenic exhaust by 13 to 50%. Legislation that protects our children from known toxins simply makes sense for my son and all of Oregon's children for whom I speak today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Chair, my name is Don Emerson, and I own a company called FMI Truck Sales and Service out of Portland. FMI is a truck dealership. We started in 1985, and currently we service about 1,200 local fleets in the Portland metro area. It represents about 3,000 trucks running around Portland each day making deliveries. We sell three brands of medium-duty trucks, and I have a little bit of experience with this whole issue of warranties and how it's affected. And this is a little side note, but the issue with the warranties and the manufacturers has a lot more to do with the EPA testing than it has to do with the actual biodiesel blend itself. It costs the manufacturers millions of dollars to pass EPA tests. If they would say to the operator that, yeah, you can run B20, then environmentally they have to test that, and they have to have tested that for the EPA. So they're kind of between a rock and a hard spot. They don't really mind it, and it doesn't really create any problems. But the reality is, if they say, yeah, go ahead and use it, they have to do the EPA testing to ensure that it meets those requirements. And that would cost them millions and millions. So it's just a side note on the warranty thing. The average truck that we take care of puts about 2,000 miles a month on running around the city of Portland and making deliveries. That represents about 6 million miles a month in the Portland metro area, day in, day out, making deliveries. I believe that this bill, these bills, as outlined, provide one of the biggest bangs for the buck that you're ever going to find for help cleaning up the metro area. While this set of bills has very little financial influence for myself or our company, I strongly support this package of bills, and particularly the bills that affect our customers and our industry. FMI, for the last 3 years, has operated our parts delivery vehicles on a B20 blend. In addition, last year we have a small rental fleet of 6 trucks that we converted to a B20 blend. And we support biodiesel today not because it's a good business decision, because it's not. We support it because it's the right thing to do. And I have to tell you that as a businessman, if we had a much larger need, it would be very hard to justify the financial costs of doing that. Growing up in North Dakota, as I did, I saw and knew lots of farmers that got paid not to grow crops. And I have to tell you that strengthens my desire to see this complete set of bills passed. It's hard for me to see even one reason why anybody could support importing even one barrel of oil when we have the means to produce biodiesel and promote economic growth for our own state and country. While nothing is free, and I truly do understand that the short-term potential loss in revenues this group of bill represents, I would ask that we all look down the road just a little bit. I feel confident that moving our state in this direction would be a great economical decision in the long term. With 20-year background in commercial customer service and vehicle maintenance, we have specific experience with two of the bills, and I'd like to share just some observations if I could. House Bill 3033, requiring all diesel contain a percentage of biodiesel, is not only a good move for the environment, but a straightforward approach for handling the expected problem with the upcoming low-sulfur fuels. The high level of lubricity of the biodiesel helps offset the loss that we're going to see in the low-sulfur fuels. This straightforward approach of fixing a problem negates the need for any potentially unknown additives that might need to be added to the sulfur to replace this. House Bill 3034, promoting the markets for biodiesel, as I outlined, FMI deals with a large number of commercial customers. Because of our belief in biodiesel, I have personally discussed
its use with many of our larger fleet customers. Virtually all of our the customers I talk to are interested in and indicating a willingness to test and or convert their fleet to a B20 blend. Many have displayed a sense of patriotism, if you will, in the fact that move the biodiesel would lessen the need for foreign oil. By far the biggest stumbling blocks most of the operators I've spoken with are historically large price increase to make that move, and the lack of available filling locations for the product. The recently enacted federal incentives, coupled with the proposed price reduction of this bill, takes a lot of the financial sting out of making this switch. The incentives could help encourage distributors to invest in the infrastructure needed to support this growth. In closing, I would like to say that of the companies I've spoken with regarding biodiesel, most, very little, just as you, Chairman, knew very little about biodiesel, where it came from, how it was produced. All of the companies that I explained the background, the process, and where it was produced, all of them expressed a sincere desire, if they could financially make it feasible and geographically feasible, to try it. I believe that this could really help to get a foothold in Oregon, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate you coming. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to ask Representative Alan Brown if he'll come and just close the testimony session. Welcome, Representative.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I hate the thought that I'm going to be one that shuts the session down.
For the time being.
For the time being. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee, for the opportunity for me to testify on this group of House bills. For the record, I'm State Representative Alan Brown from House District Number 10, and I think with the what I heard in the last testimony, I drive a diesel pickup, and so if I can get diesel for $1.50 a gallon, I'm willing to biodiesel for $1.50 a gallon. I'm more than willing to try that there, as opposed to the $2.50 a gallon I'm now paying. I'm here today to testify on this group of House bills, and I understand and appreciate the value that these bills will really bring to the state of Oregon. We need an energy policy that addresses availability, affordability, and the impact on our environment. Just Monday in my committee, we heard a bill that dealt with some of the chemicals that are used in mixed with fuel in the state of Oregon, or can be used. These aren't used, but they could be used in place of ethanol. And these, my understanding from the testimony we were given, they're really mighty nasty stuff and don't have any place in Oregon and in our environment. And so that just underlines the importance of the access to ethanol as an ingredient in biodiesel. My concerns with the bills are that whenever we have mandates upon a requirement to using a product, when the production capability is not there at present, the artificial shortages that may create. And so the having the ethanol plants in Oregon does not guarantee a supply of the product. I'm quite sure that the manufacturers of ethanol will probably sell their product wherever they can get the best dollar for it, regardless whether it's in Oregon or wherever it is. But again, though, I would thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee, for hearing these bills. I think they're appropriate, and it's timely that we address these issues. And I would encourage you moving these bills ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I will close the hearing on these seven bills. And we have just a little bit of housekeeping to do here. We have a memorial for a former Representative Cecil Johnson, who was here in the late 70s and early 80s from our area, and I would like to see the committee introduce this so we can get a legislative concept and later introduce it. So I'll open a hearing on...
Work session.
I mean a work session on the House Memorial.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the House Environment Committee request Legislative Council to draft a House Memorial honoring the memory of former Representative Cecil Johnson.
Any discussion? Any objections? So moved. We have one other thing before us, and that is...
You want me to...
Yeah, go ahead.
The chairs of our committee and the House Audits Committee have agreed to hold a joint meeting next Tuesday afternoon in what would be our normal time slot in Sherwood. There would be two parts to the meeting. One would be a tour of the local DEQ car emission testing facility in Sherwood, which would be followed by a hearing with both committees that would hear testimony related to the car emission testing program. And then the chair has asked that our committee have a separate hearing on two House bills, House Bill 3267 and House Bill 3328, which would also occur as part of that meeting. So if any transportation or...
Probably need to be up there, I think maybe at 1:30. Representative Kummel wanted to go at 1, but I think we can postpone that. Get lunch, get up there, and then we'll have a tour.
How far is it?
It may be Wilsonville, so about 30 minutes.
It's Sherwood, so it's a little bit, maybe another 5 miles beyond Wilsonville.
Oh, okay, I know.
Yeah.
And we probably will be there until close to 5:30. I hate to make it such a long meeting, but with his bills and our bills, it will help us to consolidate some of the work that we're doing. So, thank you much. With that, we are adjourned.